listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And my good friend and colleague, Carl Wolfson, is in our studio. Carl and I were on KPOJ together in back in the day in Portland, Oregon. And Carl, you're doing your own show now.
That's right.
In Portland. And tell us about your show, first of all.
Well, it's great to see your studio in Washington. And we were alongside each other for 6 years at KPOJ. And I think a lot of people know that on November 9th of last year, Clear Channel flipped KPOJ from Progressive Talk to Sports, which is, you know, Fox Sports, which Premier syndicates and Clear Channel owns. Not a single local guest on the show. It's just 24-hour schlock. And I went off, started a Kickstarter with your help and others, and we raised $55,000 in 5 days, and we're back up on the air at carlwolfson.com. And we will be moving, we'll keep our internet show at carlwolfson.com, so you got the plug-in twice. And I will be on X-Ray FM radio, hopefully beginning in January, 91.1 FM, low power FM in Portland, Oregon. I know everyone wants to hear your voice again, Tom.
I am looking forward to that.
Portland.
And for our listeners who may not know, and in fact, actually, usually it's misspelled. How are you spelling Wolfson for your URL, for your website, or do you have both?
It's Carl Wolfson, W-O-L-F-S-O-N.
Okay.
Actually, you're one of the few people who knows that the original spelling was German, S-O-H-N.
Right.
But the H would just confuse people.
Right.
Wolfshan, Wolfsahan.
Yeah.
I have a list of my misspellings. So I took the H out, the hell with the H, and it's carlwolfson.com. And I just want to put a plug that you're going to be on our show next Tuesday at 7:30 Pacific time to talk about your new book. You're going to be at Powell's on Burnside on the 22nd with your new book, and I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
And we miss you.
Well, thank you, Carl.
And everything is great in Portland.
Yeah,
in fact, things are so good at Whole Foods, Tom.
Uh-huh.
They're selling so much, the only thing left on the shelves is gluten.
That's
how good it is in Portland, Oregon.
I mean,
the economy's coming back. That's right.
I'm in trouble.
People miss you.
So tell me about politics in the Northwest, in the Pacific Northwest. Patty Murray, for example, is in the chair of this joint conference committee. Her and Paul Ryan, that are supposed to work out a budget. Patty Murray, who ran as the mom in sneakers, that was originally a slur against her, and she took that and ran with it, and has won, I believe, two elections, maybe three, 6 year elections as senator from
Washington
State.
I think she's won her third.
Yeah, and at the same time, the right wingers, I mean, you know, they've knocked down this GMO thing, and then there's this guy named Art Robinson, and I've told this story on the air before, and I'll bet 3/4 of our listeners thought I was doing satire.
No.
So tell us, you know.
Well, the good part is that both Washington and Oregon have not voted for a Republican for president since 1984. Neither state has voted for a Republican governor since 1982. So we have good, solid, progressive organizations in the state. As far as the GMO thing, 522 initiative, it was the same script they followed with Prop 37 in California last year. The label, the GMOs in Washington had a huge lead. Then here comes the Monsanto money, and they confused people. They were confusing people about what would be labeled, what would not. They claimed that it would drive people out of business just to relabel. And it lost, the same way it lost in California. We're trying to look at that in Oregon because it should be on the ballot soon there and learn some lessons from that.
You know, the simple rebuttal to that is this is no different than when they made them label how much sodium is in things.
Sure.
When they made them label how many calories are in things.
Right.
I mean, they're
it should help the business.
None of those labeling requirements put anybody out of business.
Yes. In fact, if you go back to, of course, the Meatpacking Act or the FDIC, the meatpacking industry at the beginning of the 20th century railed against that until they found out it helped their business. It gave consumers confidence in their product. The same with the FDIC. If people realized that banks had rules and regulations, they'd be more apt to put the money in the bank. So, again, it's the big moneyed interests, and we expect the same in Oregon. I have to say that the SeaTac vote was the most significant vote.
Now, SeaTac is a suburb. It's actually the name of a town that is suburban Seattle.
That's right, where mainly airport workers and hotel workers, they voted to raise the minimum wage to $15, and along with that was paid sick days, which passed in Portland, Oregon this year unanimously.
Wow.
And that is a model for the rest of the country. Now, Washington and Oregon have the two highest state minimum wages in the country. Washington is $9.19 an hour. Oregon is $8.95 an hour, and we index that to inflation.
Right.
And, that's low compared to what it should be federally, but it's still the result is all of these restaurants that claim they're going to be leaving the state or put out of business by an increase in the minimum wage, they're still around. In fact, the knowledge that we raise it periodically every time the index comes out gives business owners some planning, some surety.
Sure.
So it works for them, and they've turned out liking it. You know, so, amazing. You know, we do have progressive, but this guy,
Except for Art Robinson.
Yeah, now this guy ran against Peter DeFazio, and you have Peter on the show.
Yeah, last time Peter was on was just a month ago.
You know,
ago,
the greatest liberal in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And Peter's the 4th Congressional District of Oregon, the dean of the Oregon delegation. And in 2010, this guy, Art Robinson, who is a survivalist, he sells these homeschooling kits to make a living. He has said that public education should be abolished, that it's a form of torture. He has published, he is a scientist by trade and has published tracts which say that the nuclear waste problem, the way to deal with it is sprinkle it in very small amounts all around us. And that's the way
well,
to deal
fact,
with
didn't
it.
Didn't he at one time propose that home insulation in the walls be made
peppered.
From radioactive waste?
Right.
Or peppered with
reservoirs.
Radioactive waste? Right.
Reservoirs.
Because A, it would get you used to the radiation, and B, there would be a small amount of heat produced by the radioactive decay.
Right, right. I mean, he's got a little cottage industry going there. You're right, Tom. So basically, Peter drummed him in 2010, drummed him worse in 2012, and then this is the state of the Republican Party in Oregon. It's so bad. They named this year Art Robinson as the chair of the Republican Party. That's how in disarray it is in the Beaver State. And now
if I can add, Peter DeFazio created a website called whoisartrobinson.com,
right,
which is hysterical. Anyhow,
very funny. And simply has clips of Art Robinson saying the things that you and I have been talking
That's
about.
Right.
So he just reveals himself, and it's a little work, just a little editing, and to get the clips up. But now Art Robinson, as of last week, says he's going to make a third run at Peter. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Republican Party will be out of a crazy chair. They'll have to find a crazier one. But the only thing that makes it worth talking about beyond the macabre nature of it is this guy gets big money from hedge fund managers.
Right. There's a couple of billionaires in Washington, D.C., or in New York State, who were very, very upset with Peter DeFazio for trying to raise – proposing the stat tax, basically, a transaction tax on, and also trying to raise – the capital gains tax rate.
Right, absolutely. So in addition to that race, and I don't think Peter's in any danger, the marquee race in Oregon next year will be our Senator Jeff Merkley, who has just been the model progressive senator for a freshman year. I was at a fundraiser with Jeff not long ago and told us that before Ted Kennedy died, Ted Kennedy asked different senators to carry different parts of his legacy, and he gave Jeff Merkley ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and it's finally passed the Senate. And I would like to ask Greg Walden, who's our one Republican in Congress, you supported ENDA in 2007. What's your statement on it now? If you're John Boehner's lieutenant, top lieutenant, Greg Walden, ask the speaker to bring up ENDA in the House if you're listening to this show.
Yeah.
People in Oregon should call Greg Walden's office and say, you supported ENDA in 2007. Do you still support it? And if so, why won't your speaker bring it to the floor of the United States House? That's a good question for our listeners to ask.
And very simply, people should also be calling John Boehner's office in addition
to
their own member of Congress.
Exactly.
And say, you know, whether it passes or fails in the House, at least give it a vote.
Right. But
at least, of course, it'll pass. But then,
right.
Which is why John Boehner refuses to bring it to the floor for a vote.
Right. The Hastert rule, which he had to break.
Well, it's not even the Hastert rule. I mean, the Hastert rule said you've got to have a majority of your caucus in favor of something. The Boehner rule is you have to have 100% of your caucus, or you have to be able to pass something, which is the entire caucus minus 15 votes in order to pass.
The Boehner rule is stroke the Tea Party
actually, the
as
Boehner
long
rule,
as you can to stay in office.
Actually, the Boehner rule is meet me at the bar at 4.
Bring your golf clubs. I got to get out of this town.
And a Jimmy Thomas and a bag
of
Marlboros.
But Jeff Merkley, in addition to ENDA, of course, is a great progressive who stood up for so many things, including reforming the filibuster.
People can,
we
people can find all,
re-elect
out,
him next
all
year.
About it at carlwolfson.com. There you go. Carl Wolfson.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That's Carl, C-A-R-L, Wolfson, W-O-L-F-S-O-N.com.
That's it.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us now, Andrew Campbell, senior producer with The Big Picture. Our TV show that will play tonight at 7 p.m. Hey, Andrew, how you doing?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So tonight we're going to start out with the Trans-Pacific Partnership and PAP.
Yeah, we're going to have PAP on for his weekly segment. He's really fired up about the TPP, and that's great news because WikiLeaks just released never-before-seen draft of the official TPP, I guess you want to call it, bill. And it's basically...
It's proposed trade agreement.
Proposed trade agreement,
or
yeah.
Treaty, yeah.
I mean, that's good news for Washington, too, because this is something that was going on behind closed doors that even Congress didn't have access to.
Mm-hmm.
Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle had no clue what was going to be in this agreement, so... And this is another case where WikiLeaks is really enlightening the American people. And now it turns out that there is strong bipartisan support against the TPP from House Democrats and Republicans, too. So we'll get into that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that the headline yesterday, the day before, 20 Republicans signed a letter to President Obama saying that they would oppose fast-track authority in the House of Representatives.
Yep.
And he's not going to be able to get TPP through unless he gets fast-track authority, because it will get amended and it will get debated, and it will, you know, the horrors of it will be revealed. And I don't understand why a Democratic president would inflict this kind of damage on the Democratic Party. I don't get it.
Does not make sense at all.
Yeah. So anyway, and then we're going to do the Lone Liberal Rumble with Jesse Jane Duff and Horace Cooper.
Yeah, we have Horace and Jesse on. They're always good together, and should be very interesting. We're going to get into a little bit about the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. GOP senators filibustered the second Obama nominee for the court. It's the second filibuster in 2 weeks. And really, we're going to talk about why this is. It has a lot to do with that. The D.C. court, while a lot of people may not have heard of it, it's the second most powerful court in the country. They basically get the final say on just about every government regulation, from environmental impacts to agriculture to you name it. Hmm. And obviously, this is a huge boon for big business when you have a court that controls regulations. So Republicans want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. We're also going to talk about Elizabeth Warren. In a speech yesterday at the Roosevelt Institute, she said that the too-big-to-fail banks have gotten worse since the 2008 financial crisis, not better. And that's really something you talk about in your new book as well. Mm-hmm. You talk about the reason that there could be a future crash in 2016 is that the things that caused and brought on 2008 are still there. And
yep.
Elizabeth Warren's just taking it to the next level, saying they're even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. She's in the book, I suppose. I don't say they're even worse. I say they're just as bad. Elizabeth Warren is more emphatic than I am. And I'm pretty emphatic. That's pretty scary stuff.
And then we're also going to get into Walmart. They're giving a lot of people know that Walmart is now opening its doors nationwide at 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not paying their employees more for that. They're giving them a turkey dinner.
Well, they're giving them an extra day's pay and 25% off on a future shopping trip.
Oh.
So it's like, here, let's throw a bone to the dog.
Yeah.
But they're not giving them a raise. You're absolutely right. But
even Scrooge gave raises.
That's right. Ebenezer Scrooge gave Bob Cratchit a raise for Christmas. Andrew Campbell, and of course there'll be a whole lot more. We're going to have a walk out with Nate and our daily take and all kinds of cool stuff. Andrew Campbell, thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Tom.
Good seeing you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour, live from Washington, D.C. Tomorrow I'm hitting the road, and I will be, where did my list go? I used to have a whole long list of all the places I was going to be. I'll find it here, and I'll tell you about it in a few minutes. Anyhow, it's over. So, here it is, right here. It's over at our website. But tomorrow, today is Wednesday, so Thursday I'm going to be in Chicago. We'll be doing our show live from WCPT, and then tomorrow night, if you're in the Chicago area, tomorrow night at 6:30. Actually, I think it's scheduled for 7 o'clock, but the Frugal Muse in Darien, Illinois, and that is at 7511 Lamont Road in Darien. That's tomorrow, Thursday, November 14th. And then Saturday, November 16th, I'll be in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'll also be doing our show live from WCPT on Friday. And then on Saturday, we'll be in Minneapolis, and I will be speaking at 5:30 at the Operating Engineers Hall. Now, this is a somewhat different event. Rather than just being a book signing at a bookstore, this is a whole hoop-de-doop. I mean, the radio station is putting on an event, and it's going to be at the Operating Engineers Hall, but you have to have a ticket. The cost of the ticket includes a book, And this is a brand new hardcover book, The Crash 2016, my new book. It includes the book, it includes food and drinks, and this is going to be a big deal. But you have to pick up a ticket. So if you're in Minneapolis listening, or in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, or you want to come to there and hang out, this would be a far more hey, get to meet you, get to talk with you kind of venue than most classic book signings. But you have to go to am950radio.com to pick up your tickets. AM950radio, am950radio.com to get your tickets. And then on Sunday, I will be in, Sunday I'm flying out. It's Tuesday, actually. I'll be in Denver, and I'll fill you in on next week. Tuesday will be Denver, and then Wednesday will be Los Angeles. Thursday is San Francisco, but I'll fill you in on the details of that as we go along in the week, because I'll be back on the air here on Friday. And so, anyhow, Walmart, this just makes my head explode. Walmart, asking their employees to work on Thanksgiving. Travis Geddes writing at, we have to set the defaults on our print for this thing, Shane, so that it prints the website in the footers, because I don't know what website this came from. But the author was Travis Geddes, and he says, Walmart is making some of its employees work on Thanksgiving, but the retailer is hoping to make up for intruding on the family holiday by feeding workers a traditional turkey dinner, giving them an extra day's pay, and offering them 25% off on a future shopping trip. And they are joining Best Buy's, Kmart, Big Lots, Macy's, Target, and Toys R Us by opening Thursday. That's Thanksgiving Day. And, in a way, I suppose, I'm promoting Walmart by even discussing this. But here's the thing. Remember Scrooge? I almost said, say that what? Oh, it's over at Raw Story. Thank you very much. Remember Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol? The story of Ebenezer Scrooge? I always want to say Scrooge McDuck. You can tell what I read when I was a kid. I loved those comics. In any case, Ebenezer Scrooge was a small business person. He was the middle class of England at the time. He owned a two-employee company, him and Bob Cratchit. And his partner, Mr. Marley, had died. And he was a notorious tightwad. And, paying such a low wage that Bob Cratchit, who worked for him, could barely afford to live. And we know now that Walmart workers can't afford to live, even if they shop at Walmart, by and large. Not all of them, obviously, but many of them. And of course, many of them also qualify for food stamps and Medicaid and other kinds of, other forms of assistance. So we're subsidizing Walmart. Well, nobody was subsidizing Bob Cratchit back in the day. But Scrooge, after, the three ghosts visited him, and, if you haven't read the book, you've seen the movie. After the three ghosts visited him, he had this change of heart, and he decided that he was not going to run Scrooge and Marley and Company as if it was Walmart any longer. He was going to actually do right by his employee. He only had one, but he was going to do right by him. And so at the very end, he sends a Christmas or a Thanksgiving turkey to no, it's Christmas, a Christmas turkey to Bob Cratchit and his family in secret. And then he goes and visited his nephew for the holiday. And then the next day, the day after Christmas, which is Boxing Day in the UK, it's a holiday, actually, arguably, he sneaks into work to catch Bob Cratchit. Now, Bob Cratchit doesn't know who sent him the turkey, doesn't know what's going on. So let me just read to you from the end of A Christmas Carol. He was off early to the office the next morning. Oh, was he there early? If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming in late. That was the thing he had his heart set upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. A quarter past. No Bob. He was a full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see Bob Cratchit come in. His hat was off before he opened the door. His comforter, too. He was on a stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock. Hello, growled Scrooge. What do you mean by coming this time of day? I'm very sorry, sir, said Bob. I am behind my time. You are? Yes, you are. Step this way, if you please. It's only once a year, sir, pleaded Bob. I shall not, it shall not be repeated. I was rather making me merry yesterday. Now, I'll tell you what, my friend, said Scrooge, I'm not going to stand for this sort of thing any longer, and therefore, he continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the waist that he staggered back, therefore, I am about to raise your salary. Bob trembled and got a little nearer to the ruler. A Merry Christmas, Bob, said Scrooge. A Merrier Christmas, Bob, my good friend, that I have given you for many years. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family. And we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. Now, here's the question. What is smoking bishop? And why doesn't Walmart give a raise?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I mean, if it was good enough for Ebenezer Scrooge, it's not good enough for Walmart? Really? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And talking about the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Oh, are we having a good time? What are the old jokes? You know, I'm having so much fun, it should be illegal, or, you know, I would pay to do this rather than the other way around, although I did for several years. But in any case, it's just to be very clear, today is Wednesday. Friday, Bernie's going to be with us, as far as I know. And Friday, I will be doing this program live from our Chicago affiliate. And I think I'm doing it live tomorrow. Yeah, both tomorrow and Friday, I'm doing the program live from WCPT. So the next 2 days. So you get to hear me and pick on me and debate me or whatever you'd like, you know, for the next 3 days. We'll have a good time. And all will be well, as they say. So we're having a good time. And a special thanks to Dr. Mike Newcomb for filling in for me yesterday and Monday too, wasn't it? Mike filled in for me Monday too, yeah. Yeah. Boy, it's just, you know, when you're on book tour, we're starting this book tour because my new book, The Crash of 2016, literally started shipping yesterday, and it's just, you know, slam bam, thank you, ma'am. I mean, it's, you know, different town every day, different, you know, no two meals in the same place, no, you know, it's just incredible. It's just, but I actually, as a ADD hunter, you know, I kind of like it. I will be exhausted at the end of 2 weeks, but you'll be catching me because I'll be doing the show, like I said, tomorrow and Friday from Chicago. I'll be doing it next week from Denver. We'll be doing the show, I believe, from Los Angeles. I think from San Francisco. I'm not sure. We're still working out some of the details of this stuff. But over at TomHartman.com, you can get all the details of the show, what we're doing and when and where and all that kind of thing. So anyhow, I just shared, and I'm going to pick up your calls in just a second because I see a whole bunch of people want to talk about various things. But I just, you know, I told you about Walmart and how they're asking their employees to work on Thanksgiving Day, or some of them, and they're going to give them a turkey. And Ebenezer Scrooge one-upped them. He didn't just give Bob Cratchit a turkey. He gave him a raise. And it occurs to me that, A, probably most Americans don't know that. Right? Most Americans know the story of Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol by virtue of having seen various television and movie versions of it over the years, rather than having read the original book. I used to try to read the original book to our children when they were young, but Charles Dickens was writing in the 19th century, and little kids don't appreciate that, so we ended up ultimately going to, you know, one of the Disney-fied versions, you know, the, you know, much shorter. But I have read A Christmas Carol several times, actually. I love Dickens' work. I mean, Charles Dickens' father was put in debtor's prison. Charles Dickens understood what it was like to grow up in poverty in the United Kingdom during a time when it was actually, in some places, against the law to overpay people. There were maximum wage laws in place in the years leading up to the time that Dickens was writing. In fact, during the time of the American Revolution, there were maximum wage laws in place in parts of England and parts of the United Kingdom, where if you paid somebody over a certain amount as an employer, you could be prosecuted. And the reason why was because the powers that be, the kings and the lords and the wealthy barons, they wanted to keep the working class impoverished so that they would be politically impotent. there was a benefit to them of destroying the middle class, or of not having a middle class, actually. Not having a large middle class. There was a middle class. As I said when I set up the story before, Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge, was the middle class in England. The middle class was made up of people who owned small businesses, retail stores, farms, and, you know, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, basically, and artisans and tradesmen. That was the middle class. And it was maybe 5 or 10% of the population. And the very rich were probably 2, 3, 4% of the population. And the other 90% roughly of the population of the UK was the working poor. So anyhow, to that point, reading again from A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens' original book, Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge, the day of Christmas, sends a turkey to Bob Cratchit's house. Bob doesn't know about it. The day after Christmas, he gets into the office early to be sure to catch Bob coming in late, because he knew that Bob was up late partying because he got this giant turkey. And Bob comes in 18 and a half minutes late. And Scrooge is ready for him. And hello, growled Scrooge in his accustomed voice, as near as he could feign it. What do you mean by coming here this time of day?
I'm very sorry, sir, said Bob. I am behind my time.
You are? Repeated Scrooge. Yes, I think you are. Step this way, if you please.
It was only once a year, sir. It's only once a year, sir, pleaded Bob, appearing from the tank. This is his work area. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
Now I'll tell you what, my friend, said Scrooge. I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore, he continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the waistcoat that Bob staggered back into the tank again, and therefore, I am about to raise your salary. Bob trembled and got a little nearer to the ruler. That would be Scrooge. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down with it. Oh, the ruler. He was a physical ruler that he used. Bob trembled and got a little nearer to the ruler. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down with it, holding him and calling to the people in the court for help and a straight waistcoat. In other words, a straight jacket. Right? In other words, my boss has popped his cork. A Merry Christmas, Bob, said Scrooge with an earnestness that could not be mistaken as he clapped him on the back. A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon after a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. And thank you very much, by the way, to Sue in the chat room, who says smoking bishop, hot spiced wine similar to Wassail. Something like a hot sangria scented with oranges and infused with port. Ooh. Okay, so I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we'll discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit. And then this is how A Christmas Carol ends. I mean, this is literally the last two paragraphs of the book. So now you know where to find it. It's in the public domain. You can find it anywhere on the internet. You can buy it at any bulk of book. The last two paragraphs. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city. Are you listening, Walton family? Or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh and little heeded them. For he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins, as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived with the total abstinence principle, capital T, capital A, capital P, by the way, ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that truly be said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone. The end. Charles Dickens, Christmas Carol. So, I started this out by saying, this gave me an idea. Keep in mind, this was for Christmas. Christmas is a month from now, and a week or so. There are movements across the United States, and in fact, there's one in Seattle right now. Seattle area Walmart workers are staging a one-day strike today, according to Politics USA, coming on the high heels of a Southern California Walmart strike. Here is a meme for Walmart strikers. And maybe somebody who wants to, you know, if you write for Raw Story, or if you write for Alternet, or if you write for Common Dreams, or if you write for Truth Out, or if you write for, you know, Huffington Post or whatever, take this idea and run with it. This is not my idea. This is Charles Dickens' idea. The Give Us a Raise Walmart movement should become the Be As Good As Ebenezer Scrooge movement. Ebenezer Scrooge actually gave his employee a raise. And apparently, since Tiny Tim lived, he gave him health care as well. Or enough of a raise that Bob Cratchit could certainly afford health care. So tying A Christmas Carol and Ebenezer Scrooge into Walmart as we lead up to Christmas time, I think might be a great way to message what y'all are doing. Just an idea. From the guy who wrote Cracking the Code, you know, the book on political messaging. Just an idea. But maybe there's some of you out there who will take it and run with it. I am hopeful. So, pardon the long rant. I did want to get right into our calls, and the board is totally lit up, so I will be doing that post-haste. But that said, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And therefore, Scrooge said, I am about to raise your salary. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Brian in St. Thomas, Pennsylvania. Hey, Brian, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Brian.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you
for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I just had a few things about jobs in this country.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is I think that we need to find out a way to get more employee-owned businesses.
I agree.
To, you know, instead of all the money going to the top, I think we need to find a way to spread it out. Maybe the government should start subsidizing people instead of corporations.
Well, there are actually state laws that make it either easier or harder to create employee-owned companies or to create cooperatives. And Wisconsin is actually at the forefront in much of this. I wrote about it in the last chapter of my book, Threshold, and I think it's the last chapter of Rebooting the American Dream as well. But the information is not uniquely in my books. It's fairly easy to find. There are other states that make it very difficult to start worker-owned cooperatives or worker-owned, you know, or employee-owned businesses. So I'm with you. And we could use some probably federal legislation, although much of this, because corporations have to be chartered at the state level, the federal government really has very little say in it. This is a state-by-state battle to be had, Brian.
Okay. Well, that's why I guess we need to put the right people in office. But my second point is that I think corporations like it when there's 10%, 20% unemployment, because it gives them a bigger pool to choose from, and they don't have to pay people high wages.
Yep.
They can, you know, if they got 300 people trying to get a job, you know, they can pretty much pay you whatever they want because they know people are desperate.
Well, this is why the Republicans have worked so hard to keep unemployment above 5% ever since the beginning of the Obama administration. Because when unemployment is above 5%, it's damn hard to even keep a union together.
Yeah, because it's all greed. You know, we need to stop putting lawyers in Washington because they
Let's not pick on lawyers here, Brian.
They don't even care if they're right.
Yeah, let's not pick on lawyers. Because there are some very, Ralph Nader's a lawyer. There's some very good lawyers.
Well, there are some good ones. I'm not going to put them all in the same
let's not let the billionaires who also are sociopaths, which is maybe a small percentage of them, but let's not let the billionaires who literally don't think that average working people or kids should have health insurance. Let's not let their money pollute Washington, which means we have to amend the Constitution.
Exactly. Okay. And then I guess if you let me do a third point, it'd be all these companies. I remember when Obama was reelected and they harped on this thing that he said about, you didn't build that.
Right.
And, I picked up on it. I never heard anybody say, when a company grows and these people at the top that, were lucky enough to purchase the business or whatever, they didn't make it to the top without a lot of good employees building that company.
Yep.
And then when they shut the company down and they move it overseas because they're greedy and they want to get workers for 10, 15 cents an hour instead of paying people a livable wage in this country, it shouldn't even be legal. I mean, the government should not allow that to happen.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And Nancy Pelosi got legislation out of the House of Representatives, voted on by a majority of the Democrats and opposed by the majority of the Republicans, and passed it along to the Senate in the first 2 years of the Obama administration that would have done, to a large extent, just what you're describing. But the Republicans filibustered it in the Senate, so it died tragically. Brian, thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Bad and the very, very diffugently ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, EcoWine.com. The good, Greg Popovich, the legendary San Antonio Spurs coach, himself a veteran of the U.S. Air Force, called out Washington politicians Monday for praising veterans while doing nothing to stop the brutal food stamp cuts that went into effect earlier this month. He told USA Today that, quote, "In a lot of ways, it's a joyous day if we all remember to honor people. But in some ways, it's a sad day because soldiers and veterans don't really get honored the way they should be. Just like the way it is right now, how many vets might have to do without food stamps because of what's going on with the government right now? That program is huge to a lot of these families. I mean, huge. It gets them through, or it may or may not be there. Who knows? Because the government is not very functional at this point, as we all know." End of quote. Well said, Coach. Maybe it's time to give Congress one of your famous pep talks. The bad, CBS, 60 Minutes correspondent Laura Logan finds herself embroiled in controversy this week after she was forced to retract a misleading story about the September 11, 2012 attack on the U.S. special mission in Benghazi. But the real baddie here is Logan's employer, CBS. After conservatives whined and complained about Dan Rather's true George Bush National Guard report back in 2006, CBS fired him. They've done absolutely nothing to punish Logan for her false Benghazi report. If CBS were actually concerned with the truth and fairness, they would ask her to leave. And the very, very ugly Mia Marie Pope. There are crazy Obama haters, and then there are really crazy Obama haters. Ms. Pope is one of the latter. Check out what she said about the president during a recent broadcast of the far-right radio show, The Manning Report.
And we knew Barry as just common knowledge that, girls were never anything that he was ever interested in. He would get with these older white gay men, and this is how we just pretty much had the impression that that's how he was procuring his cocaine. In other words, he was having sex with these older white guys, and that's how he was getting his cocaine to be able to freebase.
Just completely false. And that is very, very ugly. That's incredible. I mean, people just making stuff up. It's incredible. Angelo in Cottage Grove, Oregon. Hey, Angelo, what's up?
Hey, thanks, Tom. Yeah, I try to listen to you as much as I can.
Thank you. You still there, Angelo? Oh, he's not. Okay, try and call back. Well, I think he tried to take us off speakerphone and push the wrong button. Mark Taylor Canfield, do you have a report for us from an update on the Washington State elections?
Yes, Tom. I hope to see you in Seattle again soon, by the way.
I hope so, too.
I've got an update on the Washington state elections. I reported last week on your program that the self-proclaimed Occupy candidate, Kasama Sawant, had conceded to longtime incumbent Richard Conlon in a very, very close race for the Seattle City Council. And when I interviewed her on election night, she gave the impression that Conlon had won the race, and she was sort of waxing philosophical about the lessons she'd learned from the campaign. But, Tom, I guess one of the lessons she probably has learned today is never to concede until the votes are actually counted.
Right.
Because Sawant, who is a teacher at Seattle Central Community College, is now ahead of Richard Conlon by 41 votes.
Wow.
So things have switched within the last just 24 hours or so, because just the other day she was behind by 1,200. When I wrote at Daily Coast, she was way behind.
Yeah.
At least in terms of a city council race.
Now,
so now,
you know,
she's ahead.
One of our callers called me up and ripped me a new one for even reporting that the GMO labeling thing had gone down because there's, you know, much of King County, I guess, hadn't been voted, you know, the envelopes hadn't been opened and whatnot. Is the GMO labeling thing pretty definitely a done deal? It's not going to pass?
It's still losing by 3.5 percentage points.
Well, that's substantial.
So it's very close. But the interesting thing about that is that the I-522 people took the attitude that, okay, media folks, because the national and international media was there on election night at their headquarters, they said, everyone go home, we'll talk to you in a week when we know what the results are.
Right.
In contrast, Kasama Sawant was giving Conlon cred, saying, you know, it was a good campaign, we didn't win, but, you know, we'll try again next time. And the results have actually turned out the opposite. 522 looks like it is going to go down, and it looks like Sawant may actually win. The local alternative magazine here, The Stranger, is saying that she's going to be the winner because the trend is in her favor.
Hmm.
Now, the ballots won't be certified officially until November 26th, but as of today, she is ahead in the vote count, according to the King County Elections Commission.
That's great.
And the reason that she's become sort of a national story is that a lot of her supporters got their training in activism from working with groups like Occupy Seattle. So she's gotten a lot of support from the Occupy Wall Street movement. She's actually a teacher at Seattle Central Community College, but she's gotten a lot of support from people who benefited from getting their training, you know, through the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm.
And she was only able to raise $30,000, got no corporate donations. But unlike with the GMO labeling campaign, her campaign was over, you know, it was able to overcome that big money utilizing hundreds and hundreds of volunteers.
Hmm.
So we don't know whether Richard Conlon will ask for a recount at this point, but his decade-long monopoly on that city council seat is over. And by the way, Tom, the city of Seattle has voted in favor of districting for the city council, so we're likely to see more grassroots non-professional candidates running for a seat on the council, because currently these are citywide positions, but within the next couple of years, each candidate will actually have to live in and represent their own neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the city voted in favor of public financing for city election campaigns, so there'll be a limit
Woo-hoo!
On the amount that each candidate can raise.
That's great.
So that's where we're at. And the CTAC proposition that you mentioned earlier, the minimum wage being raised to $15 an hour, that is still ahead. It's doing rather well in SeaTac, Washington. So it looks like that's going to pass, which, by the way, was one of the major platforms for Kasama Sawant's campaign. That was her number one issue, was raising the minimum wage in Seattle to $15 an hour. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
By the way,
boy, Seattle could really lead the country with that. Mark Taylor Canfield, you are principally writing these days where, Mark?
All over the place. Truth Out, Healy Coast, and I'm doing a lot of radio, so
okay.
On the web, but my YouTube channel.
Keep an eye out for Mark's reporting, you know, from the Pacific Northwest and Occupy in general all over the world. Great stuff. Mark Taylor Canfield, thanks for dropping by, Mark.
Thanks, Tom. Have a good day.
You too. Great talking with you. Mike Papantonio up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and Mike Papantonio on the line with us, the attorney, author, host of Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com, the website, and, of course, Ring of Fire TV on Free Speech TV. Hey, Pap, how you doing?
Tom, how are you?
I am fired up. It's great to have you with us. WikiLeaks, Julian Assange does it again. Don't know if you – by the way, have you seen that movie?
I haven't, no. I actually have it loaded to watch it, but I haven't.
I had dinner Saturday night with Jeff Skoll, the guy who made that movie.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very, very – and we saw the movie. Actually, a couple of weeks ago, I saw the movie.
Does it paint the picture of how important WikiLeaks is to democracy?
It does. Sure. And, you know, people who are who are WikiLeaks lovers, as it were, and I consider myself one, some are a little offended because it shows some of the human side of Julian Assange, some of which he may dispute. But it really is a thought-provoking movie. It leaves you with this really serious question of, you know, what is the role of the press and how do you have a democracy without a free press in a democracy?
Well, now, of course, you've got Dianne Feinstein and Schumer and some other folks that are trying to nullify what the press really means. They're trying to say, well, it's very specific, and, you know, WikiLeaks is not the press, therefore we can't, he has no protection. Just like saying they would do with me or you.
Well, this is why I think it's actually important for people to see this movie, The Fifth Estate, because you will walk out of that movie knowing that what you are doing, Pap, what I'm doing, what anybody who publishes a blog, you know, just their own blog, is doing, is journalism. And without real journalism, you can't have a real small-d democracy.
No.
Anyhow, that said, WikiLeaks just released one part, the IP, the intellectual property part, correct me if I'm wrong on this, of the draft agreement so far, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They're going to be meeting in, what is it, Salt Lake City or Denver or something?
Well, somewhere in Denver, I thought. But
Denver, okay. Yeah.
Salt Lake City wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, whatever. It's someplace out west. In the next couple of weeks to nail this stuff down, and I'm guessing they thought they were going to meet, you know, low profile in secret. Tell us what WikiLeaks.
Well, I mean, that's the great story here, Tom. This is the great story here is in the same way that the Citizens Media closed down Syria, Citizens Media closed down the Larry Summers story, Citizens Media created so much pressure with the administration that DOMA, you know, a lot of good things came in as far as gender rights. This is the same thing. Without the Citizens Media, most people would not know of these secretive meetings that have been taking place at the urgence, U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Wall Street, folks like Exxon, Dow Chemical, Eli Lilly, and half a dozen more multinational corporations have been pushing TPP, as I know you've talked about. This is nothing more than NAFTA and CAFTA on a lot of steroids.
Yeah, they should rename this SHAFTA.
SHAFTA would be very appropriate. But I think what people, I don't know if you caught this story this week, we're actually involved, we're going to be involved in some cases where you have a multi-conglomerate international corporation coming over to the United States or Canada saying, gee whiz, we want to drill in your backyard. And I know there's legislation that says we can't do that. We want to frack in your backyard. I know there's legislations that say we can't do that. But the TPP, the way it's written, adds so much to their ability to come in and change the laws. Now, they're already doing it just with NAFTA. Right. Arguably, NAFTA is a very weak avenue for testing sovereign rules and laws. This TPP is just, there are no limitations. I mean, they will change the entire nature of environmental law, of workers' rights, workers' safety, of pension raiders of pension programs can come and get. It just, there's no limits, Tom. And I think the ugly part is that we've had this administration that's done this behind closed doors.
This is what baffles me, Pap. I mean, I've been saying on this program for years that, and in print for years, longer than that, decades, that the first political party that embraces Ross Perot in retrospect, you know, that goes back and says that crazy old coot with the big ears and the graphs and the circles.
He was right.
He was right. Exactly. And 20% of the American populace voted for him, even though his you know, vice presidential candidate wasn't quite sure who he was. And some of his policies were just totally nutty. But they knew that he had it right on trade, and they didn't want to lose their jobs, basically.
He warned us of all this.
He did. He did. Yeah. And the first political party, because both parties, I mean, you know, both George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton ran on Ross Perot as a crazy old coot, and we're going to do free trade.
Right.
So either one of the parties has the opportunity to say, oops, and they've all done it before. I mean, on tariff policies, for example, it's gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth over the last 200 years. The first party to really seriously embrace the Ross Perot protectionist position will never again lose an election in America. And just last week, in fact, it wasn't even last week, it was day before yesterday, if I recall correctly, I was reading on my New York Times app that 20 Republican congressmen sent a letter to the president saying that they are going to do everything they can to fight fast track.
Now, some of them, Tom, are just crazies. They're Michelle Bachmann crazies, or they're just purely obstructionists. They simply, it's Obama hatred. And some of them are what you would call procedural purists that don't like the idea that you've had the president operating behind closed doors, creating these mandates without anybody knowing anything about it. But, you know, the truth is this is very, very ugly, and I think it's been way underreported.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad to hear you talking about it. I talk about it all the time. People that see this, that have actually seen bits and pieces of what this is supposed to mean, are terrified about what it does. And what it does, it's union busting, it's pension theft, it promotes wage theft, work site safety. Let me drill down. Here's the way I see it. Since NAFTA and CAFTA, they have used those things to outsource jobs and create what we call a job scarcity. In America, you have 20 people competing for the same job. Hasn't gotten any better in the last 4 years. 20 people competing for the same job, maybe even higher according to some numbers. So if you say to that person that has just passed on the job because he actually wants decent wages, he wants a little bit of time off, the employer simply says, you know what? There's 19 people behind you. They want your job. It's that job scarcity that is the drive to the bottom. It's the race to the bottom that we see in places like Saipan, India, China. And so that's what these corporations want to create right here in America.
And they have created.
They have created. But here's the point. TPP is the icing on the cake.
Yep.
And you have these vultures like Exxon, Dow Chemical, BP, Eli Whitney, Eli Lilly, all simply waiting for Obama to buy in to what is nothing more than an extension of the Clinton years. You understand, Clinton started all this, you know, Penny Pritzker, Rubin, all of those folks, Robert Rubin, all of those folks are the core and the driving force behind this. One reason they kept it quiet is that was like a red flag. Anywhere where Robert Rubin goes, the average worker is going to lose and corporations are going to win.
Although this was not entirely, I mean, not to defend Bill Clinton because he never should have signed this stuff, but, you know, Reagan started this with the most favored nation status stuff, which was the teenage and adolescent years of this stuff.
Yeah, no question. But we have to admit, Rubin drove.
Yes.
Clinton into making
I'm
all
just
this
saying
happen.
A pox on all their houses with regard to this topic.
Yeah.
And what I don't get is why Obama is doing this to the Democratic Party.
Well, I got to tell you something. I know you don't want to hear me say this. I look, you and I just have different opinions about what's happening here, and I respect your opinion. But I have an opinion. And the opinion is the money that put Obama in office the first time was the Robert Rubin, the Pritzker money, the Wall Street money. And even though he was out there saying all the right things, like we have to do something about Wall Street, we're going to lose our democracy if we don't do something, we saw him overnight change into we have to look forward. We can't look behind us.
Yeah.
And this is one of those.
I'm not trying to cut you off because I disagree with you, Pap, because I don't disagree with you. You're right. And I don't blame, though, Obama for that. I blame the Supreme Court for that. for creating a situation where, in order to become president of the United States, you've got to make those kind of compromises, which is not good for him, it's not good for us, and it's definitely not good for the Democratic Party. Anyhow, Mike Papantonio, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, of course, ringoffireradio.com for all things Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy and Sam Seder. We'll be back. And welcome back. And Pap, you're still with us, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I do mean that. I mean, there are some topics, and TPP and free trade are one of them, where I am relentless in my criticism of President Obama and the Democratic Party, and we all know where this, you know, where it's coming from. It's all coming out of the Wall Street money, and not just the Wall Street money, the transnational corporate money. And, you know, say so on radio, say so on television. So don't feel like you have to qualify anything. Mm. You know, I'm not disagreeing with you,
well,
but
you,
I see
you
a
are,
larger
you
systemic
are
issue.
You are a clearer thinker in some of these issues than I am. And I think part of it is, every day, today I woke up and I'm confronted with another ugly story in a trial, a case we're working up, corporate America, multinational corporation doing ugly things. And at some point you just say, I understand how it works because I take the depositions, I see the money, I follow the money. And I begin by saying, follow the money. And I think your approach is better and analytical than mine. I think I sometimes do jump to conclusions, but I've watched this money flow for so long that I'm saying, I just can't ignore what's happening.
No, it's been corrupting our elections for 150 years. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. It goes back in many ways to the tail end of the Lincoln administration. But anyhow, what's coming up on Ring of Fire television?
Yeah, I've got Alec in my target again. Rick Outson, who is an investigative journalist and a great reporter, is going to be talking about that. I've got Les Leopold, just brilliant economist and writer. He's going to be talking about government cutting benefits for the poor as they further enrich corporations. Ned McWilliams, very, very important, interesting case. He's going to talk about the Pradaxa case and how badly the FDA lied to the American public, covered up with Pradaxa, how dangerous it was, this blood thinner that's killing people, and actually a participant in all that. Howard Nations is going to talk about how the American taxpayer is subsidizing low wages throughout the country. And Mike Berg's going to talk about how Big Pharma hustles the FDA, and in so many ways that it's almost not recognizable until you really study it.
Wow. Please give my very best regards to Howard Nations, by the way, and to Farron Cousins and all the great folks that work with you.
I sure will.
But, he's an icon. So that's going to be a hell of a show this week.
I think so. I think what we try to do is the same thing you do, Tom, and that is to go where the media is not. It's kind of like Babe Ruth. They said, well, how'd you hit so many home runs? It is because they hit the ball where they ain't. And so that's what we try to do. And I think the stories that I try to pick out, Farron and some great producers here just look at it and say, this is where we ought to head. And I agree.
Yeah.
That's what Free Speech TV is all about. It's just a great format. It's one that everybody watching that network should support every way they can because it is the last frontier of progressive thought.
It really is, yeah. And it's growing. I mean, we Free Speech TV has added Bill Press in the morning. They're going to be adding Stephanie Miller next month.
Yes.
You know, lots of good stuff going on you know, in the weekdays and on the weekends. They're looking at some good programming. So
I got to tell you this. One of my partners just got back from New York. He said he got in a taxi cab, four different taxi cabs, and the taxi cab driver was listening to your show and every one of them.
Really?
Yes.
How cool is that?
I thought it was pretty interesting. Yeah.
That is great. So my show, our show. Mike Papantonio, the attorney and host of Ring of Fire Radio, and on here on Free Speech TV. It's Ring of Fire TV. It's a separate program. And just done here at noon on Sundays and then replayed every day of the week. You can check your listings over at freespeech.org or at ringoffireradio.com. If I have all that right, Pap?
That's right. Thank
okay.
you, Tom.
Thanks so much. It's always great to see you, Pap.
Thank you.
See you soon, my friend.
Yep.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I am, by the way, I am going to step out for a half hour in about 10 minutes, and then I'll be back at the top of the next hour, because I'm on book tour right now, and I got to do this interview with another radio station in another place, and it's just, you know, weird stuff happens. And Shano and Danielle are going to be with us, and Brad Friedman is going to drop by as a guest, and then, of course, there's Talk Radio News. So coming up in this hour, but that said, right now, let's get your thoughts on what's going on here. Oscar in in Puerto Rico, is it Camuy? Camuy?
Yeah, that's the name of my town. What I want to tell is, you were talking about the big mega store. One thing that I did was wrote them a letter, canceling my credit card, my email, all the things that they send me, not doing any more shopping by internet with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I let them know. I wrote them a letter, email actually, and then
you're talking about Walmart.
On Facebook, I asked my children to do it, and it has been good. And because I think that they need a lot of pressure, so they will pay their employees not this miserable salaries.
Yeah, it's interesting to me how aggressively Walmart is advertising right now about what a wonderful employer they are and what, you know, how nice they are to their employees. You know, trying to push back on this. I suspect that if they took a fraction of those millions of dollars and just used them to pay their employees better, it might work better, although maybe not. Maybe the advertising is cheaper than paying their employees. But the difference, I mean, you know, Walmart has a very serious competitor in Costco, and or at least Sam's Club does, and you know, Costco is the big version of Sam's, or very similar to Sam's Club. And Costco pays their employees on average $40,000 a year. Walmart obviously doesn't. And what's the difference? The difference is that the two guys who started Costco are merely multimillionaires, whereas the family that owns Walmart, the five heirs of the Sam Walton fortune, are worth more than, they're multibillionaires, they're worth more than 30%, the bottom 30% of all Americans combined, which is a mind-boggling amount of money. So you're essentially doing a boycott. Oscar, thanks for the call, and thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV down in Puerto Rico. I appreciate it, on Dish Network there. Richard in Winchester, Virginia. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I have a question for you. On the for the ACA, on the 80-20%, if a person has a policy and they don't use it under the ACA, are they entitled to that 80% rebate at the end of the year, or do they get a rebate at the end of the year?
This has nothing to do with individuals. The rule was there were some health insurance companies that were operating on 25% profit margins, or not profit margins, overhead, let's say. You know, part of that's profit margin. Part of that is the gold faucets and the CEO's private jet. Part of that is, you know, the parties with the hookers, whatever. You know, it's part of that obviously is huge CEO salaries and what do you call it, dividends to their stockholders. What the ACA says is that at the end of the year, if the company brought in $100 or let's say $100 million, and they didn't spend $80 million on actual health care, vaccinating children or, you know, looking in people's mouths for tonsillitis or, you know, treating cancer or whatever, if they didn't spend $80 million on that 80% on health care, but they spent less than 80%, so their profit margin or their gross overhead would have been greater than 20%, then they have to refund that to their customers. And then all of their customers get a refund check. And in fact, this rule went into place last year. And so at the beginning of this year, a lot of people got checks from the health insurance companies. They couldn't figure out why. That's why. Typically, they were fairly small checks, $20, $30, $50, $100. But it was because the health insurance companies had been basically overcharging. So it doesn't work on an individual level. It works system-wide for the entire health insurance company.
So if a individual has an individual absent from a company or a corporation, are they entitled to that?
Does what do you
make
mean?
Sense?
What do you mean?
If a person, say I have an individual policy.
Right.
If
you have an individual policy, then you and your health insurance company ended up overcharging, but you know, at the end of the year when they do the math, they will send you an individual check. If on the other hand your employer has a policy, then the employer will get the check, and the employer can choose whether to share that check with its employees or not. And that's up to the employer. And that's something, you know, there's a lot of things in the Affordable Care Act that need to be tweaked. And, you know, Medicare has been amended hundreds of times. Social Security Act has been amended thousands of times. Medicare Part D has been amended, if not dozens, hundreds of times. When you pass these kinds of big pieces of legislation that affect a lot of people, you fine-tune them. But the Republicans absolutely will not allow any part of this to be tweaked or fixed. I would suggest that one of the tweaks should be that if you have a policy through your company, when that refund check gets cut, it gets cut to the individuals. They know who the policyholders are, but they don't. In terms of if you don't use your insurance, though, and you don't get any money back, here's how to think of that. My youngest child is 30 years old. I don't have any kids in public schools, yet I pay property taxes. Or if I owned a house, actually, I would pay property taxes. I guess my marina pays property taxes, and they pay for schools. So why am I not complaining about that? Because we all, even those of us who don't have kids in school, benefit from having an educated workforce. Similarly, even if you don't use your health insurance policy, you're going to benefit from the fact that the guy sitting next to you at the bus stop or on the airplane, who might have at one point had tuberculosis, now doesn't because he actually did use his insurance policy and got that treated. And so we don't have, you know, infectious diseases running through our population, things like that. So even though we may not use our health insurance, if all of us have health insurance, then really, in a way, all of us are using it. There's a public health benefit to be had here. Richard, thanks for the call. Thanks for the real interesting and rational question. I'll be back in 30 minutes. Shane and Danielle will be back in just a second, along with Brad Friedman. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So coming up, Shane, Danielle, Brad Friedman, and Talk Radio News. And then Tom Hartman back on the air with you.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Obviously, I am not Tom Hartman. He will be back in just a few minutes. But me and Shano are holding down the fort
for about
a half an hour.
And a lot of times we take calls when we fill in. But that's usually at the end of the show. And we figure you're not going to get a chance to talk to Tom. You won't mind so much talking to us. But since Tom will be back, everyone waiting on hold, stay on hold because Tom will be back and he will take your calls.
Yes, and if you're trying to call in, just give us a few minutes. We'll be back to answering your calls in just a few moments. But in the meantime, you may have heard about the interesting election going on down in Virginia and it coming down to the provisional ballots in the attorney general's race. And nobody has covered that better than the one and only Brad Friedman of the Brad Blog. You can check it out at bradblog.com. You can follow Brad on Twitter at the Brad Blog, and you can check him out on KPFK right after Tom's show. Brad, thank you so much for joining us and helping us fill Tom's shoes here.
Always my pleasure. Good to talk to you, Tom.
Sorry to disappoint you.
Oh, okay. Never a disappointment. Always great to talk to you guys.
Yes. But please give us an update. As of the last I read on the Brad blog, the Democrat, Mark Herring, is still in the lead by less than 200 votes. Now, this has changed so rapidly. Is that still the case?
Got some, let's call it good-ish news, perhaps, for you. As of last night, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time in Virginia, the deadline struck for counties and cities around the state to turn in their final results, their certified results, to the state. And those certified results, after all votes have been, let's say, quote-unquote, counted, puts the Democrat Mark Herring up by 134 votes over the Republican Mark Obenchain out of 2.2 million votes cast. I mean, a huge number of votes coming down to 134 votes. It's just remarkable. And now what we're going to have is 2 weeks of the state board of elections now certifying those numbers, recanvassing, making sure all of that is right. And then on November 25th, I believe the date is, the state will certify, and thereafter, whoever happens to be the losing candidate at that point will have the right to ask for a recount, which in Virginia is much less than it than that word recount may usually sound to folks.
Right, because of the, as you point out, unverifiable touchscreen voting machines, a recount is essentially just tallying the same computer tapes that they tallied before. But in this case, I mean, you put Obenchain's statement here over at the Brad blog that this is a less than 1/100th of a percent difference in the election results. Wouldn't anybody ask for a recount, let alone a new election in that case?
Well, certainly not a new election, but a recount, absolutely. The problem, and you sort of hit on half of the problem. There's another part of the problem when we're talking about Virginia. While most of the votes cast in Virginia are currently those 100% unverifiable touchscreen votes we talked about, yeah, there's nothing you can do about them. There is no way to know if any vote ever cast on a touchscreen system like that was recorded as per the voter's intent or not, and there's nothing you can do. So basically all they're going to do is look at the results tapes from those machines again and say, yep, I said 135 votes, so that's what it is. So there is no recount on those touchscreens. However, there are hundreds of thousands of paper ballots that were also cast, among them up in Fairfax County, which is almost all paper ballots. Very heavily Democratic. It's the largest voting jurisdiction in the state there. The problem is, under Virginia recount law, get ready for this, even the paper ballots are not hand-counted unless by court order. Essentially, by and large, almost all of those paper ballots, unless a judge decides otherwise, will be run through the same optical scan computers that tallied them either correctly or incorrectly, nobody knows, the first time.
Now, so here's an interesting...
The only way we know if those are correct is if, in fact, we hand count them, and that's not part of the Virginia, quote-unquote, recount law.
Now, here's an interesting question, though. Being that this is the Attorney General's race, and we, you know, Cuccinelli in place right now, Republican Attorney General, is that... does that lend any more likelihood to courts may be asking for a hand count of these votes?
Well, it wouldn't be up to the courts to ask for it. It would be up to the candidate, essentially, to go to the court and give cause as to why, you know, we need to have a hand count, why we shouldn't trust the optical scan systems. Now, you and I, we've talked about this for years. We know that these optical scan systems are often incorrect. They can also be easily gamed, not to suggest they will be here. But all of this can happen. The only way you know that that hasn't happened is if you bother to count them by hand. So you'd have to make that case to the judge. I would recommend both candidates make that case to the judge if they really want to have, you know, citizens who at the end can be reasonably certain that the results have been recorded accurately. As far as the, you know, the touchscreen machine goes, who knows? No one will ever know. But if you actually want a count of those paper ballots, they need to be hand counted. And there's one other bizarre element here that, well, there's a few, but of the big ones, another one that I've just learned about is that, okay, I said the state will certify as of November 25. After that, there's a few days in which the losing candidate will be allowed to file for a recount. That's almost certain to happen. The recount will then move forward in December. And then after the recount is over, the losing candidate after the recount then has the right to ask for an election contest, you know, contesting those recounted votes. That's not unusual. What's unusual is the fact that a contest in this case will not be judged in a court of law. It will be judged by the state legislature instead of a court of law. So the state legislature and its partisan makeup will come into play here, which is a rather remarkable development, it seems to me, and an incredibly stupid way to run an election, to be frank.
Yes, well said. So essentially, that even though we're congratulating Mark Herring and saying this is a win for him at this point, anything could change by November 25th and then still change afterwards based on what the Virginia legislature decides? Do I understand that correctly?
Pretty much. The recount will happen, you know, such as it is, and then that losing candidate can contest the recount. Now, they'll have to give some form of grounds for the recount, and the Republicans have already put in a grounds. Actually, both Republican and Democrats have, you know, potential grounds for a contest. But the fact that it's going to be left up to the Virginia General Assembly to decide on, you know, a partisan basis, Lord knows they're not going to decide it on, you know, on the facts. They want their man in there, whoever it is, the Republicans or the Democrats. That's the amazing news about how it's judged.
I think this is a perfect example of how much we cannot trust election results on these touchscreen machines, on these optical scanners. But there doesn't seem to be a national movement, a big push towards getting these out of our election process. How do people get involved? How do people start pushing to get these horrible machines that should be scrapped out of elections in their areas?
Well, and it's not just those touch screens, it's also the paper ballots when they're op scanned. They need to be hand counted on election night at each precinct. It's tough. I wish I could send you somewhere right now other than bradblog.com to learn about this, to take action on this. But this is an issue that both Republicans and Democrats have stayed away from, by and large. Republicans, you know, they both seem to think the machines were good enough to get me elected, so they must be fine. I think is one of the ways they see them. Republicans love touchscreens. Democrats tend to like paper ballots, optically scanned. That's good, but getting the paper ballots, but hand counting them is what needs to be done. And when you've got a stupid law like you've got in Virginia that says even in a recount, you got to run them through the same computer scanners. When we're talking about a 134 vote margin in this case, I mean, these machines can be wrong all the time. They can easily miss 134 votes or get them wrong. And that's the entire election. There is no, recourse to count them again, to count them by hand. It's madness.
It's stunning. And it's just that perfectly clear picture. This is the stuff you talk about, day in and day out, year after year, and it often doesn't get covered until it's election time. But, this is something we need to work on as we head into a midterm election and into 2016 in, just a minute or so that we have left. How can people pay attention? What should they look for? Just to try and ensure that their vote is counted and it's counted as accurately as possible in these upcoming elections.
Well, one of the great things that has happened during this this canvas process over the past week is that you have had citizens really poring over what numbers were available, and they found all kinds of errors. They seem to be human errors, some of them based on machine errors.
Essentially just citizen journalism, citizens paying attention, right?
And raising hell and making noise. Yes,
well,
absolutely, Danielle.
Brad, that is something I know you're good at, and we're all better off for it. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Great talking to you.
Brad Friedman of The Brad Blog. Check it out at bradblog.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit tomhartman.com for audio and video archives.
Talk Radio News with Victoria Jones coming up in just a few minutes. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Tom will be back with us in just a few minutes here. But in the meantime, we have Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Victoria, sorry to disappoint you. I'm not Tom, but so glad to get to talk to you today.
So glad to talk to you.
So what's going on in the news?
Well, we got the official Obamacare October enrollment numbers this afternoon, a little more than an hour ago, and 106,000 and change people signed up for coverage in the new marketplaces as of November the 2nd, administration officials announced. Kathleen Sebelius, the HHS secretary, saying people are enrolling and that the marketplaces were working. Now, if you break it down, about 26,000 of those people came through healthcare.gov, which is used by 36 states. The rest enrolled in the 14 states in Washington, D.C. The figures fall well short of the administration's early goals, which were about 500,000. And the other thing is that the figures are a bit of a thingy, because they include people who've selected a health plan, whether or not they've actually paid for it. So it's kind of like you're at Amazon and you're about to buy that, you know, that whatever it is you're buying, and it's in your cart.
Right.
But you haven't paid.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask that, because if that didn't include the numbers of people who hadn't yet purchased it, being that they don't have to purchase it until January 1st, I would have said those were pretty good numbers. But
yeah, right,
including those numbers, it's not as positive as we had hoped.
No, it's not. And the health insurance industry, as a matter of course, does not include in its numbers people who have not yet made their first payment. So this is not industry best practice. Now, if you average out per state, about 744 people per state have enrolled in the 36 states, but of course it doesn't average out like that. But it would average to about 5,293 people in the states that built their own enrollment systems. So the state systems are working better, although Maryland, who I called at 12:30 lunchtime yesterday, and they said they'd call me back in the order in which my call was received, have not called me back 27 hours later.
Interesting. And being that I live in Maryland, that's good to know. So what else is going on in the news?
Also, there is a bill coming up, an Obamacare bill by Representative Fred Upton, a Republican, for a vote on Friday that would let people keep their plans that are being canceled. House Democrats are getting very, very antsy about this, and people are defecting to vote for this bill. House Democrats had a meeting with a senior administration official today, and they were exasperated. They were described as being worn thin, with basically saying to the administration, you have to come up with the fix by Friday, this fix that you've promised, or Democrats are going to start defecting in droves and supporting this Republican bill that they do not want to support.
Now, is there any talk, either by Republicans or by Democrats, about how these previously purchased plans are going to hold up against the standards imposed by Obamacare? I mean, with preventative care, with the 80-20 rule?
They're going to hold up rather badly, and the premiums are going to go up.
Right. I mean, how do you go back? How do you go backwards to care that is substandard?
You don't. That's the problem. Just about every article that I've read, almost every industry expert I've heard speak has said this is a huge problem. It's not well thought out. This is not good policy.
It's going to be a very interesting one to watch to see if enough Republicans would even vote for it to pass it, or if it's more of a talking point and a bit of show legislation, if you will. And anything else?
Yes. A group of Democratic lawmakers in the House and Senate is going on the offensive today with a historic bill that would make it illegal for states to chip away at women's reproductive rights. Senator Richard Blumenthal is going to introduce the Women's Health Protection Act of 2013, joined by Senators Barbara Boxer and Tammy Baldwin, and Representatives Marsha Fudge, Judy Chu, and Lois Frankel in the House. Now, the bill would prohibit states from passing so-called targeted regulation of a provider's laws, which provide impose strict and cost-prohibitive building standards on abortion clinics, require women seeking abortions to have ultrasounds, and create other barriers to abortion access.
The so-called trap laws, essentially, when they don't outlaw abortion, but they make it so difficult to obtain that it is essentially impossible anyway, correct?
Correct. So they're introducing that today. Also today, Speaker John Boehner dashed the hopes of Democrats and advocates of a comprehensive immigration approach when he seemed to close off the avenue that many people were thought likely to succeed, which is going to conference at the House and Senate getting together on the Senate's immigration bill. Frankly, he told reporters, GOP leaders have no intention of ever going to conference with the Senate-passed comprehensive bill. We've made it clear we're going to move on the common sense step-by-step approach. And he basically said that even with a step-by-step bill, they still would not go to conference with the Senate bill.
Now, wasn't there talk about a discharge petition to get immigration to the floor and go around John Boehner? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, there has been talk of a discharge petition, but I think the hopes for it getting anywhere are not really very high.
It's amazing. This Congress will have officially passed absolutely no legislation. It's stunning. And then to hear that right here at the end of the year, they're giving up on the hopes of passing immigration as well. Anything else in the 30? Oh, I'm sorry. We're getting 10 seconds here. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service and goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Tom will be back in the very next segment with Steve Cobble of the Progressive Democrats of America. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fresh back from ranting elsewhere. I'm ranting here again. And we'll be ranting tomorrow from Chicago and Friday from Chicago. And it's going to be great from WCPT. And in the studio with me today right now is Steve Cobble. He is the co-founder of Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org. You're also an associate fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies. PDAmerica.org, the website. Tim Carpenter also would have been here with us today. He wasn't able to be available, but we send our very best regards to Tim. And, Steve, great to have you with us.
Great to be here, Tom. Thanks.
So what is PDA up to right now?
Well, we just had our eighth roundtable over on Capitol Hill.
What is a roundtable?
Roundtable's where it was one of Tim's ideas. It was to get together activists and congressional members and their staffs to talk about ways we could push the Congress a little bit, educate them, try to move on issues that we care about that often don't get talked about on Capitol Hill because, as you know, money talks louder than people.
Yeah.
And so we started meeting once a month, 8 months ago, to do that. And today, for instance, we talked about the letter drop that you've been helping with, that your last hours video series, which I want to thank you for, by the way, since I think
thanks for
I've watched it, and it's this methane problem is, you know, one that I think people know less about than the carbon problem, and we need to hear about it. So I'm glad you're doing it, and we will be dropping letters about the climate question, pretty timely given the Philippines typhoon and the devastation there, and
tragically timely.
Tragic timing, and so we're going to be doing that. We hope to hit 200 congressional offices with our letter next week. And so I want to thank you for that. And I want to take a personal note and thank you for, I know your book just came out, and I know you dedicated it to Tim as a great organizer, and I know that he appreciated it a lot. And it was a nice touch. So thank you for that. It's not often that organizers get dedications, and it was...
Well, it's not often that organizers get recognition, and it's organizers who change the world every single time.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree.
Or they get the recognition, you know, 50 years later.
Right.
They look back, oh, that's Susan B. Anthony. She was wonderful. When she was, you know, the day that she got arrested, she had, what, 12 people with her? I mean,
Right,
you know.
That's exactly right.
So,
it was nice touch that you did, and it was generous, and I know Tim appreciates, so thanks.
Well, thank you. We're talking with Steve Cobble, the co-founder of Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org. You had a roundtable with activists and members of Congress. What happened?
Representative Grayson came by, did some talk about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or whatever they call
and
it.
And the WikiLeaks revelations.
Yeah, the WikiLeaks revelations and the fact that this secret agreement that benefits investors, which I know you've talked about numerous times already. The interesting thing is because they have to go to Fast Track Authority, and even Congress people that might be convinced to vote for the agreement itself, if it came to a vote because of the power of money, are not sure they want to just delegate authority to the president on a secret agreement that nobody's really seen yet. So there's a real chance of defeating this thing on both sides of the aisle. It could be one of these left-right votes that we've seen on the NSA.
Just like the NSA vote.
Exactly. And
although the NSA vote
didn't quite make it. But
and
we had a different one when we did the Farm Bill vote, which Jim McGovern led the fight on the left because he was angry about the SNAP cuts, and some of the guys on the right didn't think that there were enough cuts to the whole thing. And so in June we were able to defeat that, and we played a role in that. Now, SNAP cuts are still in play, as you know, and that was another subject that came up. Representative Barbara Lee came and talked about how we were continuing to fight because people still need their food stamps, and there is provision to put this ridiculous idea that you have to get a job in order to get food stamps, which is, if there was full employment, that might have some logic to it, but at a time when African Americans are suffering from double-digit unemployment, the idea that you can't get food stamps till you get a job and you can't get a job at all is just a way of saying we're taking away your food stamps. So
and
17
and it's not
million
just
kids
Americans.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
Cuts across all. But although you're right, minorities are bearing the brunt of this, which is one of the reasons why it's actually popular in Republican circles to talk about cutting food stamps.
You're right, although the interesting thing is you take a place like South Dakota, North Dakota, almost all white states, they still have double-digit people living in poverty, getting this SNAP program.
Yeah.
They don't know that it's the Republican Party taking away their kids' food.
Right.
In a regular system, the Democratic Party would let them know that that's the case. But since nobody in America talks about poverty, and the press doesn't talk about it much, with current company accepted, these people don't understand why their kids' food is being taken away or about to be taken away. It seems to me actually there's an opening there for Democrats and progressives to let the white people of South Dakota know that the Republicans don't care if their kids get their food.
Yeah.
You know, it's not African Americans in South Dakota that are bearing the brunt.
Tragically, a lot of them are watching national media on television, and they're listening to nationally syndicated shows. And I realize this is a nationally syndicated show, and we appreciate every station we're on. That said, I do believe that a city without local programming is a city that is it's the media equivalent of a food wasteland. You know, these neighborhoods where the only thing you can eat are from 7-Elevens, from national chains, basically. There's not local food stores that are offering good locally grown food. We need to have local media as well in these local markets. And I'll bet that there's large chunks of North and South Dakota where the people are not hearing that the Republicans are taking the food out of their children's mouths because nobody's doing any local news.
That's right. No, they're hearing about whether it's going to be Hillary Clinton versus Chris Christie for president 3 years from now,
right,
as if that's the most pressing issue.
Right.
They're not hearing about the fact that there's no serious climate change legislation on the table, even though that's the thing that's most going to affect their agriculture in the next 10, 20 years. Their kids are not going to be able to have farms the way they do in South Dakota,
right,
because the climate's going to change. And no one on Capitol Hill is, I shouldn't say no one, very few people on Capitol Hill are spending any time worrying about that, and they don't hear that every day.
Right. So what's next for Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org?
Well, we have the letter drop coming up, as I told you. We just helped.
What is a letter drop?
Letter drop, sorry, is our volunteers take a one-page letter that addresses their local congressperson or senator. We deliver it to the local offices, and we say, here's the things that we've been talking about and we care about this week and we would like you to take action on. And we hit three or four issues every month that are important. And this month, for instance, we just joined with 12 other groups and 700,000 petition signatures, and PDA was part of a delegation that just stopped by Paul Ryan's office and dropped off the petitions that said, hands off Social Security.
How many petitions did Paul Ryan get?
I heard 700,000. So it was, and I think they're still collecting it. Social Security Works was the lead on this. Alex Lawson, I was a point person, and they did a great job.
Guy.
Yeah, they did a great job, and they're trying to go on offense, not just defend Social Security from cuts, which we have to do, but put the argument out there that we need to be expanding Social Security because the private pension system has fallen apart and people are not going to be able to retire.
Since the so-called Reagan reforms.
Exactly, that's right. Yeah, I've heard you before, and you're exactly right about that.
It's nuts. You know, of course, the ultimate pension program is Social Security, and President Eisenhower used to brag about expanding it, and now we got Republicans who want to turn it over to Wall Street, privatize.
Right.
The Republican Party has gone insane. It's tragic. Steve Cobble, the co-founder of Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org is the website. Also an associate fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies. Great, great group here. Steve, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Twitter is @PDAmerica.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Once again, Steve Cobble, the website, PD, as in Progressive Democrats, pdamerica.org. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's pick up some phone calls here from our Free Speech TV viewers and kind of get back into the swing of things. And Dennis in Grampian, Pennsylvania. Hey, Dennis. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. What's up?
Tom, I just wanted to thank you so much for bringing up the topic of Devin Coleman in Port Clinton, Ohio, that just happened to be the place where my son was married the 2nd of November. And just to bring it to my attention was so heartwarming. I certainly wanted to thank you.
Please remind me, forgive me, when and how did I bring up Devin Coleman?
It was on the Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, yeah, okay. Got it.
And that was on the 31st of October.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm so bad with
names. I was leaving the next day, and it gave me an opportunity to show my appreciation.
Sure.
You know, for somebody in need.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Dennis, and thanks for the kind words. May in Crandon, Wisconsin. Hey, May. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I've been kind of after this and trying to communicate this in a massive way as mass communication. I'm a former member of a Northwest Pacific Coast Native American tribe. I came into this life knowing that not only I but the people around me had been reborn. The Whirling Rainbow that was given, Whirling Rainbow prophecy that was given to the Kiowa people can speak to this also. The spirit of prophecy is the testimony of Jesus Christ, and inasmuch as it appointed, this is Hebrews 9:27, for men to die once and after this comes judgment, Satan, and he does answer to the name, has been running a television station called Trinity Broadcasting Network and expanding this network for 40 years.
Pat Robertson's gig, isn't it?
Pat Robertson didn't start with TBN, but he has gone to TBN. Yeah. And he knows it's because it's a popular place to stop up for Christian viewing. But please let me get to my point.
Sure.
It's going around the globe. Okay, so Revelation 12:12 says, woe to you, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows he has a short time. Okay, his station as a fan base has been the contributing force in this religio-political war waged against the saints in Revelation 13. I believe through reading books written by an apostle and prophet in the 1800s that founded the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Ellen White?
Yes. I have seen this woman. She is now present day living in South America. It is believed by me that John Boehner looks like a leopard and has the mouth of a lion. I believe that he will eventually get into office and sign a law requiring Sunday church attendance. I believe this is the mark of the beast. I believe that the wound that this beast received was losing against the inaction of the Affordable Care Act. And I believe he has been Pontius Pilate. This is an
in a previous lifetime.
Previous lifetime, absolutely. Yeah. This is an age-old war against God and his Ten Commandments, and most importantly, which is the Fourth Commandment, which is the mark of God's authority rather than this beast that he speaks of in Revelation.
Right.
And you know, you're supposed to set aside Saturday beginning at Friday at sunset. It's apostasy. And these are the harloting churches that are on TBN because they keep Sunday.
Right.
I believe this to be a strange American somewhat like a Nazi movement. I've received the bread of life from Christ's hands. I have not yet received the blood. I believe the great earthquake at the end of time is before Christ's second advent will be the oil pumped out from between the plates.
Oh, yeah. Mate, we're out of time, but John Boehner as the devil. I cannot rebut that. I cannot rebut that. May, thank you for the call. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Bridget in New York City. Hey, Bridget, thanks for listening to WWRL. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for all your good work. I'm a big fan.
Sure.
And this is going to seem very trivial in comparison to the last couple of calls, but I wanted to respond to your excitement about Scrooge as a meme for Walmart and Thanksgiving. And I would just suggest that if we all thought about Ebenezer Scrooge as a young man, he actually was kindly and loving, and he retreats from antipathy and from his miserliness and his bitterness and returns to a natural state of community and finds.
Yeah, in the story, yeah.
Right, right. So I think for the meme to work, we would all need to look at ourselves as Scrooge, because without our patronizing all of these corporate enterprises that are choosing to do business on the one day of the whole calendar year when we are all supposed to experience this collective state of giving thanks. If we chose not to sanction that, this would not be an issue for Walmart workers, and then we can just keep the focus on all workers being paid a living wage every day that they're putting in.
Well, know, Bridget, the boycott of Walmart that is not an organized boycott at all, it's just people saying, enough already, I'm sick of it, I'm not going back there.
Right.
Is actually working. There's a reason why Walmart is spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on television advertising, you know, where the Walmart employees are talking about how happy they are to have their jobs. It's because that's having an impact. The next step is to actually have Walmart become a decent wage employer. And decent enough that we're not all having to subsidize them. I mean, this crazy business model where they pay their employees so little or work them part time so that they qualify for food stamps and housing assistance and Medicaid is a tragic outcome, unintended consequence of the Welfare Reform Act of 1996, and has been seized upon as a business model by these companies.
Right.
But I agree with you on the Scrooge, on the arc of Scrooge. And in a way, that's kind of the arc of Walmart. If we were to use Walmart as the metaphor, if the thing was even Scrooge gave his, ultimately gave his employees a raise, because, in the early days of Walmart, Sam Walton was not running a low wage business. He was paying people a reasonable wage. I mean, it was low, but it was low reasonable. And one of their slogans was made in America. He was buying from American manufacturers. Things changed radically after Reagan changed the rules of the game, basically. After Reaganomics changed the rules of the game, Walmart decided to jump in. And then when Bill Clinton changed the rules of the game with regard to companies being able to get subsidies for their employees if they just paid them poorly enough, Walmart became the poster child for that. But I think you could say that it's possible that if Walmart were to come back into the fold of community and start paying the way that Costco does, for example, that they would have experienced that same redemption back to their original state that Ebenezer Scrooge did. What do you think?
I don't think that his
heirs have acted in good faith, and I think they actually have been relentlessly and almost on a mercenary level contemptuous of their workers. So I wouldn't expect too much. I wouldn't expect any blood from that turnip.
Yeah. Well, but if it were to happen, it would be nice, right?
It would be, but I
share your skepticism. I do. We'll have to see how it plays out. But I still think that to capture the public attention, there's nothing like quoting Charles Dickens. Or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it's a crazy idea. Bridget, thank you for the call. Thank you for the very thoughtful call. I appreciate it. Jim in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I was just wondering, kind of playing devil's advocate here, as to why you think there should be a crash if there's an abundance of labor in this world. And if stocks go up because corporations make money, they're always going to make money because they'll always find cheap labor. I was wondering if you could punch a hole in that.
All you have to do is look at the 1930s. I mean, there was such an abundance of labor after the stock market crash of 29. And frankly, there was a huge abundance of labor before the stock market crash of 1929. There was a lot of cheap labor. If you go back and read the actual histories of the Roaring Twenties, and we have a fair amount of that in the book, The Crash of 2016, although one of the best chroniclers of this is Krista Freeland in her book Plutocrats. She does a brilliant job of documenting what it was like from the turn of the century until the late 1920s. She was the former editor at Financial Times. The victors tell history is the story of the victors. History is the story of the rich people. And so we think of the Roaring Twenties as a time when everyone was prosperous. The fact of the matter is everyone wasn't prosperous. There was a very small class of people who were making a lot of money and conspicuous in their consumption. And then there was this huge working poor, and the middle class had become fairly small during the 1920s, in fact. And to the extent that the middle class seemed to be living large, they were doing it the same way the middle class was doing that from basically 1995 until 2007, which was by flipping houses, was with real estate, you know, buying houses, fixing them up and selling them, or simply buying houses, waiting 6 months and selling them. The housing market and the stock market, the other thing was the stock market, were driving inflation in the bubbles, basically, in those two marketplaces is what drove the economy leading up to 1929. And that surplus of labor didn't become obvious to everybody until after the stock market crash, but it had been there all along. The times now are not that different from 1929. In fact, they are more similar to 1929 now than they have ever been since 1929.
But is it possible that corporations have wised up and they've, okay, we made that mistake before, maybe, you know, we'll just...
No, because the corporations, the really big companies in the crash of 29 were not hurt. The really big fortunes in the United States that you saw in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s, those really big fortunes were made during the Great Depression. The companies that were liquid, the big companies, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, these big companies, the Dow, Mellon, the Chase, these big companies were able to buy up assets on pennies on the dollar, and that's what they're going to do again. They're looking forward to this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And that's why they write about it. You know, you read the Financial Times, you read some of these reports that rich people read, and they're talking about this coming too, only they view it as a buying opportunity. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This is interesting. Quite a debate about whether the Senate's had the 50 votes for the public option. Interesting. Anyway, John, in Woodburn, Oregon, you had some thoughts on Charles Dickens?
Hi, Tom. Honor and a pleasure, sir.
Ditto. Thank you.
Well, you know, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Story is the, anti-social Darwinism, and I thought we had put social Darwinism to bed in the 1890s, 1900, but apparently now it's alive and well again.
Oh, yeah.
I had subscribed to a free quotation service on the Internet, and the guy ran Reagan quotes 3 days in a row, so I unsubscribed. And I quoted some of the things I've learned from listening to you and struck a nerve. And he came back and said he prefers zero taxes and everybody gets what they deserve and they're paid on what they produce. But he's running a program over Google for free, no doubt getting paid for the number of subscribers. And he's using quotes that other people created. So, you know, how is he...
Right. And he's on the internet, which was created by the U.S. government as DARPANET,
ARPANET,
with authorizing legislation signed by Al Gore.
Uh-huh. That's right. Well, anyway, and my other comment is I graduated from Northfield High School in 59. And
Northfield, Vermont?
Right.
I used to live there.
I went to the University of Vermont. I had a political science professor who said if you, instead of going to college, if you just read the New York Times first two pages faithfully for 4 years and looked up all the stuff you didn't know, you'd end up with an Ivy League education. Mm. And I think people who listen to you 3 hours a day for the same amount of time with the same conditions would end up the same.
Well, thank you for the compliment, John. And I would say of the New York Times that, you know, up until probably 15 or 20 years ago, that was the case. But our, you know, since 96, when the Telecommunications Act was signed by President Clinton, and I remember driving down the street and listening to the news report about how CBS had just moved their news division under their entertainment vice president. And I thought, okay, this is the beginning of the end. And Carl Wolfson was in the studio this morning. He was telling us that the Oregonian, which is the statewide Oregon newspaper, has gone to 3 days a week instead of 7 days a week. And, of course, it's owned by a company out of New York State, a very conservative family, Newhouse Publishing. And it's just, you know, things aren't what they used to be. But thank you for your kind words, John. And hopefully we can keep some of the spirit of Walter Cronkite alive on this program. I appreciate your very kind words. BT in Owensboro, Kentucky. Hey, BT, what's up?
Ah, pleasure to talk to you, Tom. Yes, I'm a retired Teamster, and I just wanted to say, talk about the issue of the folks working the holiday for straight time pay for Walmart if they get that opportunity.
Well, they get a turkey dinner.
Yeah, and a turkey dinner and the opportunity to work for straight pay on a holiday. If we had the Employee Free Choice Act put through where they could vote on if they wanted a collective bargaining agreement or not,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't have to put up with that.
Yep.
It's just ridiculous. And there's a lot of people working in Walmart itself towards that, but they're not getting much help. They're not getting any help at all on the Employee Free Choice Act.
Yeah. And it's tragic. You know, when the president was first running for election and back in 2008, he was talking a lot about card check, the Employee Free Choice Act, and it just seems to have dropped off the radar screen. And I think that's
it dropped off, and I don't think he had any intention of pushing it too hard. But people need a voice on wages, benefits, and working conditions. They need collective bargaining.
Yeah. Another way to say it, and I absolutely agree with you the way you said it, BT. But the way that I would say it is, we need democracy in the workplace, at least in large workplaces where it's possible to run them like kingdoms. We need democracy in the workplace to balance the power of aggregated capital, particularly distant capital. And that, by and large, means unions or worker-owned co-ops and things like that. Well said. Larry in Kerryville, Texas. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to bring up something that I haven't heard yet anything about. I watched Rachel Maddow, and today the big controversy over Texas abortion was on her table.
Mm-hmm.
I have had some thoughts about this, but have hesitated to voice them. You know, what about men's rights?
With regard to abortion? I don't think men can get pregnant.
With regard to abortion, with regard to, you know, I think these women's rights organizations are really doing a big injustice to women, because for centuries, the problem of pregnancy has always fallen on the woman, and no responsibility or virtually no responsibility and accountability is held to the men. So men's rights, and I lost a son to an abortion, and I was married to her at the time, but it got in the way of her career. So she had an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question to you is this.
the responsibility by women's rights groups and Planned Motherhood, because it isn't parenthood, has been largely taking care of abortion, birth control, so on and so on. The pharmaceutical companies, I think, are missing a big, big market by not developing birth control for men so that men have an equal choice in whether they want to get a woman pregnant or not.
Well, I got a vasectomy 20-some, almost 30 years ago.
Pardon me?
I mean, I got a vasectomy. There is birth control for men.
That's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
I see what you're saying. You know, if you want to, okay. Although they are, I guess, more easily reversed these days than they used to be. But to the best of my knowledge, there is some work being done on birth control for men, but it doesn't proceed apace the way it does birth control for women, and probably because there's not as much demand, because men tend to be more irresponsible on such issues because they don't actually have to have, you know, something growing inside them. They don't have to deal with the pains and the medical risks and ultimately the responsibilities of a motherhood of giving birth. So it's a conversation, Larry, that I think that we need to have nationally, and we need to have in a larger way. I continue to believe that if men could get pregnant, abortion would become a sacrament. And that, you know, I realize that, you know, perhaps you're the exception to the rule. Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, we haven't heard your wife's story on this thing, but it's a conversation that we should be having in this country rather than just shouting at each other and blowing up abortion clinics and trying to shut it down, because abortions are going to continue to happen no matter what. And birth control is going to continue to happen no matter what. It's just, is it going to be clean, or is it going to be messy? Is it going to be safe, or is it going to be deadly? And, you know, these are issues that we need to discuss. Larry, thanks for the call. Jeffrey, New York. Hey, Jeffrey,
hey,
what's
Tom.
Up? Watching on Manhattan Neighborhood Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. Hartman. First, I really just thank you for all the good work that you're doing. I listen to you daily.
Thank you.
And I always come away with a jewel.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartman. Hello?
I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Yes, I want to just share the idea that bottled water, the impact of bottled water on the environment that's helping this global warming. I do believe that if you could put the water back where it belongs,
mm-hmm.
into the in circulation, that it may help. Because, see, now I'm in my 50s, and I remember back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s how green the deep green the trees, the leaves on the trees were. Mm. But now they're dull.
Yeah.
You see, I've been watching this over the years.
Yeah, to a certain extent, that's because warmth, the climate is moving north, but the trees aren't. And the trees need for those what are they, anthocyanins, the name of the red and orange and yellow chemicals that are in the leaves that are normally covered up by the chlorophyll, by the green chlorophyll. And when the green chlorophyll dies, I think they're anthocyanins. I could be wrong on the word, but the colors pop out. For those colors to pop quickly requires a relatively sudden change in temperature that is about the time that the tree is expecting it. And when it comes later than the tree expects it, then and with different amounts of rain than the tree expects, which is what's happening as global climate change is moving our growing seasons north, the fall colors are not as vibrant and don't last as long. That seems to be the principal thing. But I think that your issue about bottled water is spot on. I mean, why are we taking little tiny bits of water, mostly from public water supplies? Most of the water sold in the United States is tap water, you know, filtered to take the chlorine out. Why do we take tap water and wrap it in oil, which is what plastic is made out of, wrap it in oil, and then use oil to ship it all over the country and then sell it to people who want to drink water? I mean, it makes no sense. So you open the tap, you've got water. I have never been able to figure out the bottled water phenomena outside of, you know, I've been in third world countries where it's a survival strategy, but, you know, here in the United States, I don't think so. In fact, I think that some of these plastics might even be more carcinogenic than whatever you're getting out of the tap. So, Jeffrey, good point.
Excuse me, good point. But thank you for the call. We will be right back. It's 15 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, exposing the con and conservative. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And by the way, at TomHartman.com, we have you can get my entire travel schedule as we start our book tour here coming up. Just check it out. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Corky in Hilton, New York, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Corky, what's up?
Hello, Tom.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm calling to put my support in for Elizabeth Warren. I think she has the key to the solution. Go after the big banks. They're involved in everything, even our health care, the insurance companies. And they're running a scam, you know, because the policies that are being taken away from people, our policies did not meet the minimum standards.
Mm-hmm.
And in health care, you have to have a minimum standard. You know, doctors can't go in and treat you however they want to treat you. There's a minimum standard what they have to do to treat you. And it's the same thing with everything in our society. We have minimum standards. Mm-hmm. If they don't meet the minimum standards, it can't be sold. So what they're doing is the insurance companies, along with the big banks, are involved in screwing up this whole healthcare system because it'll take away some of their profits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an insurance company, they don't sell turkey sandwiches on the corner. So where do they get their profits from? Their profits are from denying me care that the doctor suggests I have.
Sure.
That's where their profits come from. And we, the American people, are so stupid that we eat up all this garbage they sell us on the talk shows and the news channels. We eat it up. Can't we think this out for ourselves?
I know. I don't understand why we haven't had a serious debate in the United States about whether we should even have health insurance companies, except for things like, you know, if you're very wealthy and you want to have a health insurance company that's going to, you know, fly you to another country for a particular type of treatment, or that's going to move you into a private room or even a private floor of a hospital or something like that. I understand that role, but in terms of basic primary care with no deductible whatsoever, why are we not having a conversation about why do we even have these banksters that we call health insurance companies? Why are they even part of our economic landscape? There are other countries where they don't exist, and those countries are doing just fine, thank you very much.
If you could have seen the look on those guys' faces when Elizabeth Warren looked at him and says, have you taken any of these banks to court and prosecuted them?
Right. I saw it.
Their face went blank.
Yep.
Because it's a question they won't answer, they can't answer.
Yep.
Because they're beholden to the big banks.
Well, and half of them are hoping that when they leave their regulator's job, they'll get a job, you know, making $1 million a year as a vice president with one of those big banks.
Yeah.
And that's another problem, is the revolving door in Washington, D.C. And the bank is probably not going to hire them if they just, you know, sent the CEO to prison.
All right. Granted.
Yeah.
But that's what's got to be done.
No, I'm with you. I want the Ronald Reagan solution. As much as it pains me to say it, you know, he sent Charles Keating to prison. Along with 600 other people. And that was for a relatively minor banking scandal. It was the result of Reagan's own deregulation in 83 of the S&L industry that blew up in 86. But he sent people to prison, or at least whoever was running the Reagan White House. I mean, Ronnie probably didn't quite know exactly what was going on, but he sent people to prison anyway, his administration did. But the Obama administration, not so much. It's something that we need to hold them accountable for. Yes, I'm with you on Elizabeth Warren. I salute her. We'll be back. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick heads up. Tomorrow I will be in Chicago. We'll be doing our show from WCPT Live. That is not an audience thing, but if you want to come and say hi, please do. Tomorrow night I'll be in Darien at the Frugal Muse bookstore signing books with a new book out. It's called The Crash of 2016, of course. And that's at 7511 Lamont Road in Darien. And you can get the information over at chicagosprogressivetalk.com. I'm pretty sure it's their website, or tomhartman.com. And that is a free event, although you're welcome to buy a book or just, you know, sit there and browse it or listen to me rant about it for an hour. And on Saturday of this week, I will be in Minneapolis at the Operating Engineers Hall, and that's at 6 p.m. I'll be talking from 6 to 7, and then from 7 to 8:30, there'll be a reception with appetizers and an open bar. And for that event, you have to buy a ticket, which includes the cost of a book. You will be buying a book when you buy the ticket, and also food and drinks. And for that, for Minneapolis, go to am950radio.com. The event in Darien, Illinois, in the Chicago suburb, at Frugal Muse, is just a straight book signing, as opposed to a reception and a dinner and the whole, or not a dinner, but a, you know, reception with appetizers and open bar and, you know, that sort of thing. So, if you're in the Chicago area, drop by the bookstore and we will have a good time signing books. And if you're in Minneapolis, drop by and we'll share a glass of wine or two. It should be fun. Anyway, I shouldn't say such things. Let's see here. Stephen in New York City. Hey, Stephen, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine.
Good. I was thinking about what you had said about the Depression. The Empire State Building was built in just over a year because the workers came to work every day. They were afraid that they would be replaced if they didn't come to work.
Yep.
Which is amazing because of the size of the building.
Yep.
The other thing about the Depression was they didn't have social programs like Social Security, welfare, food stamps, or anything like that. But we do have those now. I'm figuring that this recession that everybody's talking about so much, it's not really a recession because we do have these social programs. If we didn't have them,
if we didn't have them, we would be full bore right now in the teeth of 1929.
Yes, if not worse, because the population is so much more now.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And because the decimation of our industrial base is so great, whereas in 1929, our industrial base was relatively intact. We had a demand crisis, but we didn't have a supply crisis. We didn't lack the ability to make things once the demand came back. Whereas right now, we not only have a demand crisis, in other words, people don't have enough money to buy things, but we also have a supply crisis. If people want to buy things, they have to buy things that are made overseas.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think one of the other results of the Depression was Ayn Rand. Her philosophy now is fueling these politicians that are basically recreating this whole problem all over again.
I don't disagree. I absolutely don't disagree. And you know, like I said earlier, some of the largest fortunes in America, the Great Depression was very, very good to very wealthy people who were cash rich, who were very, very liquid. The Great Depression was the best thing that could have happened for them. Because they could have bought things that in 1929 sold for $100. They could have bought them for $25 and $30 in 1931, and they did. And you know, some of the great fortunes in America were made during that time. Of course, the middle class got wiped out, and that's why people need to know about it. They need to know how it works. They need to get ready for it. Stephen, thank you for the call. David in Mamaroneck, New York. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, good evening. I'm currently in Brooklyn. Mamaroneck is about an hour and a half away from me. Good evening. I just wanted to actually vent about something. A week or two ago, an MBA called in.
Mm-hmm.
And she had said she had trouble getting a job. I graduated from Fordham in 2010, and the keynote speaker told us all we should go to Shanghai to get a job.
Yay.
And he was right. I got an MBA in finance, and I've actually read about 20 books since then on finance and realized that most of what I learned was incorrect. For instance, I learned Milton Friedman's philosophy about leisure being more preferential for work if tax rates are high, which doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Also, I read your book, and I've been thinking a lot lately about the Tea Party and their psychology,
mm-hmm.
and basically their morality of work. You know, what do you think is morality is so different than ours,
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, they believe that their main fear or concern is somebody free riding on the system,
yeah,
getting something they don't. I think it goes deeper than that. I think they have a fear of the stability of money. And you can't, I read your book. I didn't read your book. I read a few pages of your book, and you spoke about FDR's speech, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself."
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to state that I always felt that what he was speaking about, it wasn't during World War II, you're correct, but what he was speaking about was we don't have to fear this, losing the stability of the dollar.
Right.
In other words, he was putting in a great deal of capital controls, and there was a lot of fear in the country, you know, the banks being closed and him taking a lot of action. I always thought that he was trying to comfort that side of our society that you know, wants stability in the dollar.
Yeah. I don't disagree. Although I think it was much greater than that. You had, I mean, literally you had, to paraphrase Roosevelt, a third of the country ill-housed, ill-fed, ill-clothed. People were terrified because they thought things were going to get worse. And essentially what he was saying is, I'm going to make things better. I'm actually going to take action. We're going to make the government, and David, thanks for the call. We're going to make the government the employer of last resort. We're going to fix this damn thing. So just chill out and hang out with me and go along. And that's basically what he was saying. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from the studios of Mighty WCPT in Chicago, Illinois, with all the news and information you won't get from the mainstream media. Plus my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. And check out my new book, just out, started shipping yesterday, the day before. It's called The Crash of 2016. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.